Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And again, remember, you can listen to these podcasts. You can listen to the show if you miss a portion of it. Not only going to 95.9 WATD, but you can also go to the podcast site, or you can check out iTunes, as we do have stuff there. Joe, who's our next guest?
On the line right now, we have the mayor of the city of Brockton, Mayor Bill Carpenter. Mayor, how are you?
Good evening, Joe. Good evening, Kevin. Great to be back on Monday Night Talk with you guys.
It's very nice to have you back. Here we are after the elections. A number of things that we'll look to talk with you about. First and foremost, I think probably the biggest issue that every time I turn around and I'm listening to either our news station or something that's being reported, it seems as though an issue with pedestrians being hit by motor vehicles. Give me your thoughts on this situation, because you've had a couple of tragic things that have happened.
Sure. I guess we've had in the city of Brockton within the past month two tragedies involving children being struck by motor vehicles. About a month ago, we had a 12-year-old boy who was struck and killed quite tragically by a tractor-trailer truck. And then more recently, a couple of weeks ago, we had just a little 3-year-old who was struck by a car. The investigations in both accidents, in neither case is there any wrongdoing on the driver involved, and in neither case was the driver cited for any violations. These were just tragic accidents that took the lives of children, and they're heartbreaking, they're gut-wrenching. I mean, I've got to tell you, Kevin, I'm still a first-year mayor, and there are some aspects of the job that I'm still really getting a hold of, and you know, one of them that probably there's no way to prepare for is, you know, holding the hand of a mother that just watched her child die an hour or two earlier. Mm. And these events have had a tremendous personal impact on me. And I'm sure at some point tonight you'll ask me about our handling of the school crossing guard issue here in the city. And, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that the impact that those two incidents had on me over the last few weeks certainly impacted the way that I responded to this understaffing of the school crossing guards. So it's, you know, there have been a couple tragedies. The most recent event reported this past week, a woman that was had a tow truck back over her, quite unfortunately, at night. And that one is still not clear. That's looking more and more like, you know, a possible assault, homicide, something. But something tragic had befallen that poor lady prior to the tow truck arriving on the scene. And that investigation is being handled by the Plymouth County District Attorney. It's actively being investigated. A suspect has been arrested and charged with assault and battery. But that investigation is still ongoing, and I'm not sure exactly how to characterize that one. But, you know, certainly we have had a couple tragedies in the past month here in the city with children being struck and hit. And, I mean, you know, part of it is here, Kevin, you know, Brockton's a little different than Marshfield and Duxbury. We are a city. We're very heavily populated, densely populated, with a lot of traffic, both of cars, not just from residents, but, you know, folks who work here and travel through here. And you got to remember, particularly the inner part of the city, these streets and infrastructure were built and designed 100 years ago before anyone ever anticipated, you know, the amount of vehicle traffic that they would be asked to hold. So, I mean, it's certainly, you know, the safety is something we certainly look at constantly. I've been having conversations with the superintendent since these tragedies about us making a couple of our police department community engagement people actively in the elementary and middle schools this year, really stressing safety. And on the school side, they're looking at their health class curriculum to put a bigger emphasis on safety, particularly you know, in and around the streets of the city. So a couple of terrible tragedies. We are responding to them. I guess at the end of the day, we've just got to do a better job of watching our kids and teaching our kids how to be safe near the street.
Well, that's actually what I was going to ask you, is how much of the responsibility do you find it being on the parents of the children to make sure that they're not riding their bikes, you know, into the road?
Yeah, I think the education piece, Joe, does involve both parents and children. I know when I was a kid growing up a long, long time ago, I was certainly reminded at home and at school about all the, cross on the corners, look both ways, have a buddy, all those things. And I guess one of the results of this is I want to make sure that we're still doing as good of a job of that in educating children how to be safe. And you're right, depending on the age of the child, that the parents do bear some responsibility also. But I'm certainly not pointing the fingers at the parents in either of these incidents. Terrible accidents and tragedies certainly do happen. And when you've got, a city of 100,000 residents with the type of vehicle traffic that we have here in the city, we're looking at this issue from all sides. I mean, we've also stepped up our traffic enforcement unit, and I've committed some more resources to that because I've got to make sure that drivers driving the city of Brockton also have a clear signal that if you don't drive safely here within the city limits, you'll be cited and it will cost you some money.
Yeah, and we're speaking with Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, who is our guest for this segment. This is, I'm going to segue away from the pedestrian problem and kind of go into, I know when school started that you were out there very proactive. Actually, I thought I saw something in regards to, you were so proactive that you were even helping kids cross because of a shortage that you had with crossing guards when it came to kids, going to and from school.
Yeah, I got a little bit of grief for that from some folks. But, my intent was to be out there monitoring exactly what was going on. The school department on the first day of school had made a substantial cut in the number of school crossing guards due to budgetary constraints, from 117 at the end of last year to only 72 this year, roughly a 40% cut in the number of crossing guards. And I was out there on the first day of school. I visited six or seven schools between the morning and the afternoon, and I came away at the end of the day feeling very uncomfortable with our level of staffing and feeling as though the kids were not as safe walking to school as they had been at the end of last year. So, I did at that evening a couple weeks ago on that Wednesday night of the first day of school, at the school committee meeting, I did personally appeal to both the school committee and the custodians union. For folks that aren't familiar, all of our school crossing guards are members of the custodians union who perform these duties as part of their jobs. And, I went to both sides and said, we got to get back to the table. We've got to get back to the table immediately. And I really had today as the deadline in mind that we had to get this resolved because today was the first day of kindergarten. Kevin, I know as you reported earlier today, we were able to successfully reach a new agreement between the school department and the union that allowed us to bring back 28 additional school crossing guards this morning, got our staffing back up to 100, which is a level that both sides agreed is a safe level. And, I'm somewhat relieved here this evening to know that today we had 100 school crossing guards out on duty for today that included the first day of classes for our kindergarten students.
And just a reminder, this is something that is a long-term solution in what you were able to kind of hammer out in the past couple of weeks.
Well, what this is part of this new agreement will be part of the new collective bargaining agreement that will continue to be subject of negotiations, but this was probably the largest issue being dealt with under this current contract, and we felt it was critical that we peel this one off, get an agreement. In essence, last Friday, both sides signed a memorandum of understanding that I believe will be formally ratified by the school committee tomorrow night, and then ratified by the union membership probably a little bit later this week.
Okay. And staying on the school theme, but we go on a larger level, I believe a week ago this week, you were on with Dave Skill in the morning, talking with him about what's going on between the city of Brockton and Stonehill College. Now, I know you only had two or three minutes to kind of talk with him and give him an update, So here you get to kind of, you know, expand that a little bit.
Sure. Well, this is, you know, and so, Kevin, what you're talking about is a longstanding arrangement between the city of Brockton and Stonehill College that is actually located just outside the city limits in the town of Easton. And for quite some time, Stonehill has been connected to the city of Brockton sewer treatment system, so that Stonehill, although they get their water from the town of Easton, sends its sewerage into the Brockton sewerage system. And it's no secret that during the campaign I challenged that current arrangement, that contract, as being very unfair to the city. What's happened is Stonehill College has grown over the last 15 to 20 years. Under the old agreement, they've been able to continue to make multiple new connections to the sewer system without paying a connection fee to the city. They've expanded their capacity quite a bit, without any permission or authorization from the city. And most importantly, our sewer system here in Brockton is built differently than probably many of the towns in your listening area, and that is that we do charge a metered sewer rate using block rates, so that the higher your usage, the higher rate that you pay. And the reason the city has structured the rates that way is so that, you know, a small family, a senior citizen, an individual homeowner would pay a lower rate per gallon because they're smaller users, and to keep it affordable. But yet a place like the VA hospital or a food processing company that draws a lot of water and sewer from the city actually pays a higher rate. At Stonehill right now, they have about 50 individual meters, and actually they use the water meter rate, but they have it broken down to about 50 smaller individual accounts that keeps them paying the very, very low rates that are not really intended for a user like Stonehill, as opposed to what would be a much higher rate if they just had one single meter that was metering all of Stonehill's usage. And it's a dramatic difference. Stonehill paid us a little over $200,000 in sewer fees this past year. That number would have been close to $500,000 if there was only one meter. It's a shortfall to the city of about $240,000. So this is a significant issue for the residents, the ratepayers in Brockton. You know, I believe there's a fairness issue. Upon becoming mayor, I approached Stonehill College. I went to talk to Father Denning. He agreed to have Stonehill enter into discussions with the city about amending that contract. And those discussions have taken place periodically over the past 6 months. Unfortunately, we just haven't been able to get to an agreement. The increases and changes in billing that, you know, Stonehill has offered to agree to just, you know, barely make a dent in really what the shortfall is to the city. So working with our legal department, the most recent version of this agreement was signed in 1996. Our lawyers say that a state statute says that a municipality cannot be bound to an open-ended contract for a period longer than 20 years. So therefore, our feeling is that as of September 1st, 2016, Brockton can terminate the agreement. And about a week or so ago, that is the notice that I had our attorney send just before September 1st. I did, in fact, on behalf of the city, send an official notice to Stonehill College notifying them that in 2 years, on September 1st, 2016, Brockton terminates the agreement and will no longer accept sewage from Stonehill College. So I felt I had to protect the interests of the city. The attorneys advised me for this type of agreement, something like sewer, you have to give a reasonable notice if you intend to terminate the agreement. And we feel 2 years is a very reasonable notice. So essentially at this point, you know, Stonehill has a couple of directions they can go. They can come back to the negotiating table with me, and I'm certainly willing to sit down and continue to talk with them at any time and see if we can reach a mutually beneficial agreement. Or they can go in another direction, and they've indicated they may do that, and they can look at either connecting to another sewer system or building their own sewer treatment plant, you know, right there on the campus. And so essentially at this point, the ball is in Stonehill's court. They have sent me a very brief correspondence just acknowledging the receipt of my notice. but also indicating that they may like to speak to us again in the not too distant future. But, you know, I'd like to have a fair deal for the residents. I cannot allow to continue this very, what I feel is a one-sided, unfair arrangement between the city and Stonehill. And I think, you know, most residents of the city feel as though, you know, Stonehill College, particularly with the fact that it's located outside of the city limits, and I don't think anyone questions Stonehill's ability to pay a fair rate for their sewage, and why shouldn't they pay the same rate that our other large users pay?
Okay. You kind of answered every... Joe and I already had three or four questions. You, like, answered them in, like...
I'll try not to do that again.
No, it's okay. It makes
sense. I'm still a new mayor. As I become more and more experienced, I'll learn not to actually answer the questions.
We'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. Watch me bob and weave on the next one now, then. Okay.
Well, actually, the next one, I think, is more favorable as well. It's not too long ago... there was something that we had reported on here is that the city of Brockton, through the help of your police chief, Robert Hayden, and his connections with the transit police and other police departments, was able to acquire for use a deterrence observation deck that is currently located on Legion Parkway. And I myself did a little bit of reporting, went up there, spoke with some of the residents.
So you saw the tower, Kevin?
I saw the tower. It's impressive.
The tower is the coolest thing. I've been up in it several times. I think I just like going for the ride because the whole the booth is the best way I can describe it. The booth sits up on top of this hydraulic structure about 35, 40 feet in the air, and then the thing actually lowers the booth all the way down to ground level. You get in and out, and then you go back up again, almost like a ride at the fair. But I love the booth. Seriously, just last Friday afternoon, Karen Polito, who's the lieutenant governor candidate on the Republican side, was visiting us here in the city of Brockton, and she asked me to take her for a walking tour of downtown. So naturally, I had to show her the tower, and she was fascinated by it, and you know, thought it was really innovative thinking in terms of urban law enforcement, and we think so too. I mean, Kevin, as you well know, Chief Hayden and I have made a very big commitment to increasing the number of video surveillance cameras across the city, both city-owned and privately owned, and that's an ongoing effort that we've already started. We believe that video surveillance cameras make the city a safer place, and I believe as we're continuing to be able to improve the lighting and add cameras, particularly in business districts and target neighborhoods across the city, that the city becomes safer as we do that. And this is almost just another version of that. This tower, which can be manned, is not manned most of the time, but it has three video surveillance cameras on it that are covering the entire Legion Parkway area along with a section of Warren Avenue and Green Street. And this has been a problematic area for years in terms of drug distribution and other street-level crimes, public drinking, et cetera, that discourage business, make people not feel safe, and really hurt the image of the city. And, you know, we're committed to fighting that now. And this is just another front that we're fighting that battle on. And, Kevin, I'll let you answer, but I've walked to most of those businesses with the chief, and every single one of them says that since we put the tower up, they've seen a dramatic decrease in the number of undesirable people hanging out in the street in front of their businesses.
Yeah, that's exactly what I heard. I heard the same thing. But then there were a couple of individuals who I spoke to who were like, there's no crime here. There's nothing going on here. I'm like, yeah, because that's here.
Yeah. Right. You know, listen, you know, I think one of our biggest challenges here in City Hall, and mine as mayor, is to change the perception of the city of Brockton. I need folks in Pembroke and Marshfield and Duxbury to come to Brockton, to go out for dinner, to do some shopping, to spend some money here, to seek employment here. And, you know, that happens now, but the only way that's going to increase is by us being able to change this perception of Brockton, that not all you hear is just whenever a crime is committed on the news stations, but to really create an environment here where it's clean, it's well lit, it's safe. You want to get out of your car here. You want to spend some time here. And so, you know, that's an ongoing effort on a lot of different fronts.
Right, you got a new slogan, right?
Yeah, thanks. So our new slogan is, when Brockton is home, everything is within reach, and we believe that. So part of that equation is, as I said, having the city clean, well-lit, and safe. We need a police presence, and I think this is part of our police presence that clearly reduces illegal activity, but also makes people feel safe.
Mayor, what...
And Joe, if you want to come for riding it sometime, I'll be happy to schedule
Joe,
it.
Joe likes stuff like that.
You know, it's funny. I see those in New York. They have them all over the place in the city.
Yeah, and we borrowed this one from the transit police, and you're right. It's exactly the same thing that's used in New York. You see them used at Times Square, New Year's Eve, and big events.
Yeah.
This particular one that we've borrowed is used on the Esplanade for the, you know, 4th of July fireworks. So this is kind of a little bit of a different use of it, but it really, and this whole thing is built on a trailer, so it's mobile. Mm-hmm. You know, we could have it in this location this week, tomorrow move it someplace else, next week move it someplace else. So this one belongs to the transit police. We've just borrowed it for a short while, but it's giving us a chance to test drive it, and I've got to tell you, I'm having some confidence. The chief wants me to buy him one, and I don't have the money laying around today, but I think that may become part of our capital planning for next year's budget, because I really can see the benefit of it.
If you're renting it out, I would be a very happy renter.
Well, we actually borrowed it, so I don't know that we could rent it out to someone else. But it's cool. It really is flexible. It's unique. It's different. And what's really important is it has three different cameras on it that are capable of providing a live feed back to the police station, which is the reason why we don't feel we have to keep it manned. But one of those three, two of them are the typical type of high-quality surveillance cameras, but the third one that sits up on the roof of the booth is actually an infrared camera. The camera alone goes for about $25,000-$30,000, but it can see at night. I actually went up there at night to check it out with a couple of the police officers, and a block and a half away, there's a gas station, and late at night, you can read the plate numbers on cars parked at a gas station a block and a half away. It's awesome. So I think that policing in the 21st century and us being able to improve public safety in a city like Brockton has to include technologies. The budget is always going to limit the number of officers you can have on the street. You can only put so many out. Whether you got 500 or 200, they can't be everywhere. And this is why I believe so strongly in dramatically expanding the number of video cameras, along with improved lighting. I do believe makes the city safer. And Kevin, as you've reported in the past, we've instituted a regulation now that, as of November 1st, requires bars and restaurants serving alcohol to have outside video cameras. And I've also applied a requirement to any businesses that are open after 1 a.m. or before 5 a.m. to also now have video cameras. So, you know, we're doing it with regulation where we can. We're doing it with public money, the public buildings downtown, the parking garage, the school administration building are just a couple of examples of public buildings where we have installed cameras in the past month or two. And cameras, they deter crime. And in the unlikely event someone's still stupid enough to commit a crime within the view of the camera, it leads to a speedy arrest and conviction. And even in that most recent incident involving the death of the woman in the parking garage last week, Kevin, that we discussed a little earlier, video surveillance has been an important piece of the investigation there. There's video from down at the corner that shows, you know, a man and a woman walking into the garage together, and then about 12 minutes later, the man walking out by himself. So, I mean, that piece of video evidence continues to be a key part of that investigation. And, in fact, we were able to identify the man from the video.
Again, we're with Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, and he's our guest, has been our guest, will be our guest for the next couple of minutes. Joe, you had a question?
Yes, Mayor. Talk to us a little bit about your interest in buying the desal plants and kind of where that stands right now.
Well, where it stands right now is it's being considered by the city's Water Commission. We'll have another meeting coming up with them soon that we'll be providing some additional information they've requested. But to try to give it to you in a real Reader's Digest version, you know, the city about 6 years ago entered into this agreement with a private company, Aquaria, that was a Spanish company that's now owned by a Korean company, Anima, to build a water desal plant down in Dighton on the Taunton River Basin and to provide Brockton with a second source of drinking water. This was required because of a consent decree a few years earlier from the state, because Brockton was running short of water, because they did not want Brockton to become too big of a drain on the Silver Lake Reservoir, that Brockton had to develop a second source of water. So there's no question the city needed a second source. Unfortunately, the deal that was entered into has not worked out for the city the way that, you know, I guess folks would have hoped at the time. I inherited this thing, but the bottom line is, this year the city is paying $6.3 million to Aquaria to not take a single drop of water. It turned into a horrible deal for the city. So in looking at what our alternatives are, and there are some out there that think we can somehow just break the contract and walk away from it, after doing a lot of due diligence with our attorneys, both inside and outside, I don't believe that's possibly the case. But what does make sense, and I said this back during the campaign, is that if we could negotiate a deal to purchase the plant at a good price, it would make more sense to own it than to rent it. So after several months of very tough negotiating, that even involved representatives of the company coming to Brockton from both Spain and Korea, we struck a deal to purchase the plant for $88 million. Now, this plant can produce up to 5 million gallons of the most pristine drinking water in the world to the city of Brockton. And under the previous administration, there had been negotiations to try to purchase it also, but they'd never been able to get the owners below the number of $101 million. And so we believe driving the price all the way down to $88 million, combined with today's historically low interest rates, we can get a bond from the state at only 2% interest to finance this deal, that the conditions will never be more favorable for us to purchase the plant. Now, under the current contract, if we do nothing, this annual fee keeps increasing every year. So it's $6.3 million this year. It goes to 7-point-something next year. And within 4 years after that, it's up to $10 million per year. And again, that does not include the cost of any water we might use. That's just for our share of the fixed cost. So this is a bad deal that gets a lot worse if we allow it to continue. If we purchase it for $88 million, we lock in the annual fee at somewhere between $5 and $5.5 million per year, depending on the number of years we spread it out over. And you know, we lock it in at the $5 million. So it's kind of like, you know, is it a better deal to own a house or rent a house? Well, right now we're renting it for over $6 million. The rent goes up to $10 million, and 14 years from now, when that agreement runs out, we have nothing. They've taken all our money.
Right.
We still need a second source of water.
And you paid their mortgage.
Yeah, we now have to negotiate a new agreement, and we still continue to pay, where if we purchase it and finance it over 20 years, it's only $5 million a year, and I say only because only is compared to the $10 million that the current deal will go up to. And at the end of 20 years, we own it. So, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not a financial expert, but I think if you talk to any accountant, they'll tell you that owning an asset always makes more sense than paying an expense. So I feel this deal stands on its own merit. I believe there will be a big demand for water in the Metro South area in the not too distant future. It would provide us with an opportunity to sell water and sell sewer to our neighbors, which would be win-win on both sides. It would generate revenue to the city to help offset the cost of owning the plant. It would also allow some of our neighbors to increase their supply of water that they will need for increased growth. But honestly, if all I did was shut this plant down, it still would save us millions of dollars over the years. But that's not the intent. The intent would be for us to a certain extent, be able to lessen the burden a little bit on Silver Lake, also provide some additional water to our neighbors that would bring revenue into the city of Brockton. It also puts Brockton as a city, as I try to reinvigorate the economy and development in the city, puts Brockton in a very unique position going forward for the next decade or two of being one of the few communities in the state that would be able to attract industry by saying that we have water and sewer available. We have excess water and sewer supplies. So, you know, bring your business, bring your manufacturing firm here to the city of Brockton.
Well, we just got less than 2 minutes left here, and so I'm going to ask this final question.
I can't answer a question in less than 2 minutes.
I know that. especially something of this magnitude.
I'm not sure you could ask one in less than 2 minutes.
That's true. 2-0 for the mayor right there. Just the latest on the power plant. I know that you got dispositions going on regarding the lawsuit this month, and I believe that there's a new player. Can you speak to either one of those real quick?
Real quickly, you know, back about, I forget the exact date now, but 5 or 6 weeks ago, 4 or 5 weeks ago, the Supreme Judicial Court did respond to appeals, both from the developers and the opponents, or actually the city at that time, of the development of a naturally gas-fired electric power plant here in the city. In essence, you know, it was the city's final appeal was exhausted. The permitting of the plant and all aspects of the way the permitting were done was upheld by the courts, and the city is out of appeals. So, you know, I've expressed over and over and over that the city really now is left in a very vulnerable financial position with a $68 million civil rights lawsuit moving into the discovery and deposition phase. Our own attorneys telling us we have very little likelihood of prevailing if we play this lawsuit all the way out, facing tens of millions of dollars of damages, and just to continue the legal fight, having to spend $1.5 or $2 million over the next year just to continue to fight the lawsuit. So I do believe the most prudent direction for me to take as the CEO of the city is to explore the possibility of seeking a settlement that would be favorable to the city. I haven't said we'll definitely settle. I haven't said exactly what that deal would look like. What I've said is the smart thing for us to do is to at least explore the possibility of whether we could get a settlement that would avoid the city having to pay damages, that would bring millions of dollars of future revenue into the city, and still allow the city to have a say in exactly what is built. So that's my position. That's been my position pretty consistently for some time. Regarding the developers, sure, it's become very widely publicized over the last couple weeks that Jay Cashman of Quincy has invested in with the developers of the electric plant. Despite what you might read online, I do not know Mr. Cashman personally. I believe I've met him twice in my life. I certainly know of him, and he's a very successful, impressive guy. And he's been involved in a lot of successful projects. I believe he brings an additional level of credibility to the developers, and I'm hoping that will help the process move forward if we are able to seek a settlement. But I am not directly involved in this proposal to build this plant. Anyway, this plant was proposed 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. Again, kind of like Aquaria, this is a mess that I've inherited. So I'm going to do the best I can under today's current set of circumstances to get this thing resolved in favor of the residents of this city. So, you know, I'm aware of Mr. Cashman's involvement in the project now. I've never heard or read anything but positive things about Mr. Cashman. I know he's a very successful guy. But honestly, in terms of what my role in this is, as the mayor of Brockton, it really doesn't impact my role at all.
Well, Mayor, we want to thank you for joining us and being a part of the conversation like you are every month. Anything you want to say in closing?
No, just great to be with you and Joe. And as you guys know, and I always mention, I'm a guy with Marshfield roots, and my dad still lives in the town to this day. And so it's anytime I can get a chance to jump on WATD with you guys, I'm happy to do so.
And I will tell you, I did get a lot of positive feedback about the little mayoral summit that we had, so that might be something we talk about doing before the end of the year.
Well, I don't know how much credit I can take for that. I'm kind of the new kid in the block with that, but, you know, Mayor Koch, Mayor Sullivan, and Mayor Kay are all great mayors, and I think I learned a couple of things that night. So anytime you want to put me in the room with those outstanding mayors, I would be happy to do so.
There he is, Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter joining us this evening. Thank you, Mayor.
Hey, good night, guys. Great to be with you.
We are going to step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.